I'd like to welcome everybody, honourable members, Deputy Minister, and the DG and the team, Department of Public Works. Honourable members, as you all know, that we were supposed to have this meeting last week on Tuesday, but there was a concern from members that consistently in the past would have the minister attending the committee meeting. But for the first time, last week we didn't have the minister or the deputy minister. And the feeling of the committee meeting was that we should not continue with the meeting. So that either the minister or the deputy minister are present. This morning we have the deputy minister present. We do have an apology from the minister. He's unable to attend. But also we on the side of the members of parliament, we have the apology from Entebbe. And there's a standing apology, as you all know, of Honorable Wouter, who's unable to attend any parliamentary activities or meetings due to ill health. It's a resolution that was also adopted by the House. My name is Mandla Khai. Member of the NZOP representing the Eastern Cape. I'm also the chairperson of the Select Committee of Economic and Business Development. I'll allow members to introduce themselves and then the department.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. My name is Eddie Makua and I represent the province of Gauteng.
Good morning, I am Matthew Fakodekhale from Limpopo province.
Morning, my name is Makusini Shabamu. I come from Free State and COP member.
Good morning, Willem Faber from the Northern Cape.
Morning, colleagues. My name is Vusi Pikoli. Sorry, Vusi Makwebo. I like him. I'm from the Eastern Cape as well. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Yakulont and I'm here from the Western Cape.
Good morning to colleagues.
Good morning, honorable members, DM. My name is Nziwonge Tabantu. I'm the director of the Department of Public Works.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Anbige Naika. I'm the head of planning from the Department of Public Works.
Good morning, members. My name is Imtia Faisal. I'm the DDG for governance at the Department of Public Works.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Samuel Tubakhale. I'm a DDG responsible for the program management office. I'm also acting DDG for projects and professional services, public works.
Good morning, members. I'm Swansea Matthews. I'm the DDG responsible for the Immovable Asset Register.
Morning, honourable members. I'm Herman Pinar from Finance.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm TM Stan Anderson, EPWP.
Morning, honourable members. My name is Aaron Mazibuko, Finance, DPWP.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Tando. My surname is Olaba. I'm from the Ministry of Public Works.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Dixon Mukona, Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Ministry.
Okay.
George Mtimunya. I'm from Pumalanga.
Parliamentary staff.
Good morning, I'm Nurse Piwa Dimitolo, the committee secretary.
Good morning, Mr. Rasmus from Parliament. Good morning, everybody. Ismail Hussain, PMG.
I think everybody has introduced himself. And as I indicated earlier, in terms of the apology, we have an apology from the minister who's attending the NEDLAC meeting that is taking place today. And indicated earlier that Honorable Ntebe is due to ill health, is unable to be part of the meeting. Thank you very much. I'll take now this opportunity to hand over to the Deputy Minister and the DG one for the overview and also the tabling of the APP and budget. Start with the Deputy Minister.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and once more good morning to all the colleagues present. First of all, let me begin by apologizing about last week. We're very sorry about it. I was along the road in a cabinet committee meeting on the understanding that the minister would be here. And obviously there was miscommunication between us. My staff were desperately trying to get hold of me in the cabinet committee meeting, but we're not allowed to take our cell phones in. So they were unable to connect with me, and I think by the time the message got through to me, you had adjourned. I think the DG was representing the minister in a property conference, the South African Property Charter meeting. Yeah, and then also in the earlier hours of the morning of last Tuesday, our chief financial officer Cox Mahoro lost his son tragically as a result of a colon cancer. So we were a bit deep apologies for, you know, we do, and I think colleagues will remember that they got rather sick of seeing my face in this committee when we were busy with the expropriation. So we are committed to engaging actively with the select committee. Apologies for last week. I'll be quite quick in terms of the overview because I think there's a lot of detail, and hopefully under your direction, Chairperson, you will also direct my staff, maybe not necessarily to go through what I think is something like 160 pages of slides. But so that we can get to the detail, let me be very brief. But I mean, just quick background. Since 2012, basically, with the former minister, Minister Tulas Mesi, who was appointed late in 2011, and then I came in somewhere in the middle of 2012 as the Deputy Minister of Public Works. The department has been in a process of a major turnaround effort. I think it's no public secret, that the department was in serious crisis. A series of disclaimers from the Auditor General, I think in 3 years in succession. The DG will remember the exact years. And led by the former Minister Lacey, we set about a major process of turnaround. And turnarounds take a long time. Minister Lacey, when he came in 2011, had three big piles on his desk, three large stacks of files. The one was from the Public Protector, the one was from the SIU, and the other was from the Hawks, I think. Basically detailing a whole range of issues and problems. And I think that in the last several years, basically the team in front of you is, I think with one possible exception, there was one part of the department which was relatively functional. It's a new team that has come in over the last several years. The disclaimers have disappeared from the Auditor General. And the big issue, the big turnaround restructuring has been the setting up, which is why there are two reports in front of you, has been the setting up of a property management trading entity. So we've got a Department of Public Works and then something called a government component, which is the property management trading entity. It's there are shared services between the department and the property management trading entity, but its accounting, the property management trading entity, is ring-fenced and is, accounts in a different way. But it doesn't have a separate board, and we all know that boards have a bit of a checkered history in the recent period. So it accounts directly to the Director General and to the Minister of Public Works, the property management trading entity. But the idea is to understand what it is that what is our core focus as the Department of Public Works. And I think we were slow to recognize, although there had been a cabinet decision dating back to the late, I think, 2007 or 8, that the department needed to set up a property management trading entity. That was finally, well, we've been in the process over the last several years of finally doing that. And the idea is to professionalize what we're trying to do. Essentially, what the main business of the department is to be the landlord for the vast property portfolio of national government. And so we're the landlord to the police, the correctional services, and a range of other major departments. And as a result of professionalizing and ring-fencing this critical task, I think there's been a significant improvement. Obviously, the other tasks, which are vested in the department itself, would include the regulation of the built environment sector and professions, and then the coordinating function in terms of the expanded public works program, and then obviously policy in the space of public works. So those would be the function. We've got clean audits in terms of the main boat, which is the Department of Public Works, over the last several years. There have been some qualifications with the new property management trading entity, particularly relating, as colleagues will explain, to getting the immovable asset register up and running and perfect, and we're now very happy that we've done that. We've now got a complete immovable asset register, and what's more, we are now able to also value the properties, which was not done previously. And of course, what we discover is that we're by far the largest property entity in South Africa. We're about 7 times larger than the next largest one, which is Growthpoint, which is a private property company listed on the Johannesburg Stock Securities Exchange. So we're dealing with a huge, huge property portfolio, and we know we've got a long way to go still in order to improve the quality of our functioning in that space. We know that there are derelict buildings. We know that there are challenges in terms of maintenance of the property and so forth. But we do believe that we've made very significant progress in getting a handle on that. It's impossible to navigate that space if you don't even have an effective asset register. So you're kind of navigating without a map. So we've got all of that in place. So let me stop there for the moment. Chairperson, if that's okay, and let's try to get into the detail of the APTs, if that's all right. That's important.
Thank you very much, Minister. Judging from our past experience, when the department was taking the report for both the department and the PMTE, we took up until one, just on the report. Now I agree with you, Deputy Minister, that we now have had this document for a longer period, given that we did not meet last week. So members are aware of what is contained in the presentation. I was also approached by the committee secretary last week. There's something else that the department, other than just the two reports, that they want to deal with in the committee. I'm raising it so that we also take that into account. It says, discuss earlier, the department is developing a service delivery model where all the drivers in the external environment must be assessed from a service delivery perspective. In this regard, Mr. Faisal, DDG, GRC, from the department would like to interview Chairperson and a cross-section of the committee members of the select committee. So I'm raising it so that we take that DG into account. That we'll be dealing with three matters, the department, PMT, and also the request on the service delivery model. Yeah. I want to give you time, therefore, for the two entities, the department and the PMTE, 1.5 hours, so that we use. I know it, I think it's going to be better because it's APP, unlike the annual report, because it took us some time. And with APP, at least, these are your intentions of what you will be doing in this financial year. So it may not be as, in terms of questions, as detailed. As others. So within 1.5 hours, then the two reports should be done. Thanks.
Thank you. thank you, Chair. Let me start with the last part. Just a slight modification. I think if their correspondence was seeking an opportunity and an audience on a dedicated basis, in order for the department to meet its requirements for as we are developing a service delivery improvement plan, which is a requirement. One of the things that is critical in that is that we must talk to the stakeholder and get inputs from the stakeholder about their perceptions of the department, their expectations, and any of the things that are critical for the service delivery improvement for the department. So when we corresponded, we did not necessarily require that it begin this meeting, because we realized that this is going to be this meeting alone will take the full time. And that process, we anticipate, can take about 1.5 to 2 hours, because we want to engage with the committee in detail about those aspects, including there's a long questionnaire we will have to deal with when we deal with that process. So we were just tabling it in order for the secretariat and the committee in its planning to see when they can be able to then accommodate us within their program, just for that. And then we will have a fully fledged service delivery improvement plan as part of our turnaround to complete that process. We have a similar request. We have made a similar request to the portfolio committee as well. So that is the amendment, Chair. So today, we think we have only time to deal with the APP and the budget implications for both the PMT and the department. If with your permission, we propose that we deal with it on that basis. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask Mr. Faisal to go through the presentation. I have also instructed him and trailed him to deal with the most only the essential parts of the presentation. I will deal with the issue of managing the responses and engaging with the committee. Safe to say that, as the DM has indicated, the presentation will be in two parts, but we propose that we do both because they complete the business of the department. Because if you do one part, then the questions might be on the other part, and therefore it might prolong the discussion. The manner in which we have structured the department as we see it now is that it focuses on critical issues because it has a function, a concurrent function. Critical issues of policy development, coordination of the intergovernmental activities, and professionalizing the two sectors that we are regulating, which is the construction as well as the property environment. Remember, we also have a big program called Expanded Public Works Program, and then, as I indicated, the management of the prestige policy. That is in the department. In the property environment, then we deal with issues that relate to the property management, which is the real estate, the construction, and the facilities management issues. And then he's going to indicate how those are separated and interlinked, with all of the support functions being shared between the two entities. I will hand over to Mr. Fraser. He's not going to cover every slide, but I asked him to indicate slide number every time he gives to it so that he doesn't leave the members behind. Thank you. Mr. Fraser?
Thank you, Luigi. And good morning to everybody once again. Chairman and members, the program budget structure is what we have on the slide before us. What we have is we have five programs in DPW and six in PMT on the right. And in the center, we avoid duplication by ensuring that finance and SCM, all the corporate services, governance, professional services, and internal audit are all shared functions. Moving on to the constitutional and legislative mandate, as you are aware, the mandate of the department is contained in the Constitution, Schedule 4, Part A, which talks to functional areas of concurrent national and provincial legislative competence, so we work concurrently with the provinces in carrying out the public works functions. In terms of specific areas of legislation, we also have GIAMA, the Government Immovable Asset Management Act, the Construction Industry Development Board Act, the CBE Act, which is the Council for the Built Environment Act, as well as various pieces of legislation which govern the six Built Environment Professional Councils. And of course, that is buttressed by white papers, two white papers, construction and property sector charters, as well as certain BE charters and the Green Building Framework. Chairperson and members of the committee, moving on to our annual performance plan, what we try to do is to create a golden thread between our vision and mission statements in our big aspirational statements over a five-year horizon and longer, and the national development plan, and try and link it to specific goals and objectives within the organization. And all of this is linked to the medium-term strategic framework. On the one level is government's contribution to the national development plan, which the annual performance plan is also linked to. Just to reemphasize what the DG and the Deputy Minister have also said, our main goal as the Department of Public Works is to transform the construction and property sectors, to provide oversight of the public works sector, which means the public works sector at municipal and provincial levels, given that public works is a concurrent function. Thirdly, we also provide oversight over public employment programs, in this particular instance, the Expanded Public Works Program. We also do prestige. We oversee delivery to the prestige clientele, which includes the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary. And we are also seeking in the year ahead through a new program to build capacity in the built environment professions with respect to scarce skills within the industry and within government in the areas of architecture and engineering in particular. Planned policy initiatives going forward. In the year ahead, our key policy initiatives include the expropriation bill, which was returned by the President for further consultation, and that is the current position with the expropriation bill. Secondly, we also have a public laws, general laws amendment bill, which is seeking to repeal legislation that has become obsolete or inconsistent with the Constitution. We are also reviewing our white papers, the one white paper, Public Works Towards the 21st Century, and creating an enabling environment for reconstruction, growth, and development in the construction industry. And we hope to develop a new white paper at the tail end of it, culminating in a Public Works Act. We are also reviewing the CIDB and CBEX, which establish the Council for the Built Environment and the Construction Industry Development Board. And we are also planning to develop legislation to establish the IDT, as a public entity supporting the state in the delivery of social infrastructure. Chairperson, moving on to Part A of the Annual Performance Plan of DPW, what one can say in succinct terms is in terms of a global overview. We look at the external as well as internal environments when we prepare our plans. And these then filter in to our plans, given the fact that our plans need to be aligned to realities out there, both externally as well as internally. On the external level, the global environment, what we see is that there's a global recovery which is gaining traction. On the level of the South African economy, there was a hope for improvement in 2017 as well as 2018 with a forecast of 1.2% growth in 2017, although we know that in recent times we've had two consecutive quarters of contraction in the growth of the economy, which to some officially means we are in a recession. With respect to the construction sector, the increase in social infrastructure by government, including investment in housing, schools and roads, is seen to create an opportunity for growth in the sector. With respect to the labor force, the growth in unemployment was offset by the increase in unemployment by 239,000, and this resulted in a 0.5% growth in the unemployment rate to 27.1% in the third quarter 2016, and all of these factors were taken into account in the preparation of our plan. Chairperson and members of the committee, in responding to these external challenges, some of our interventions include the alleviation of poverty, unemployment, and inequality through the Expanded Public Works Program, EPWP Phase 3, and the goal of Phase 3 is to create 6 million work opportunities equivalent to 2.5 million full-time equivalents over 2014-15 to 2018-19 financial years. The development of entrepreneurial capacities through EPWP, where we have an enterprise development program. We are also providing training through skills programs, learnerships, and artisan development as an integral part of the Expanded Public Works program, so potential participants can earn a future income by providing them with work experience and training, and as well as information related to work opportunities. We also have a skills development program in the built environment professions, which we call the Skills Pipeline Program, that seeks to monitor the development of an individual from school-going age right up until registration as a professional. That is included in our new program, too, called Professional Services. We are also seeking to transform the construction and property sectors, mainly through our policy branch, through legislation, as well as the CBE, and we also recognize that our Built Environment Professional Council, all six of them, are integral to ensuring this transformation. We are also appreciating the fact that our business of construction and leasing is susceptible to fraud and corruption, and we have a significant combative strategy to deal with fraud and corruption, whilst we also align with the cost containment and reduction in spending objectives established by National Treasury to align to cost-cutting requirements over the medium term. Given this background, our strategic priorities for the department then in terms of our plan going forward is one, to lead and coordinate the public sector-wide expanded public works program towards the creation of 6 million work opportunities. Secondly, to clean up the governance in department is to strengthen the governance, risk and compliance function, which was established 2 years ago. Thirdly, we are relaunching Operation Bring Back to Reclaim misappropriated and unlawfully occupied state properties. Number four, we are managing integrity and promoting ethical conduct in the department. Chairperson and members of the committee, the public service regulations were issued last year, and one of the key interventions of the public service regulations is to introduce a new integrity management framework, and as a result, the department is in step by ensuring that we are among the first to establish a proper integrity management framework in the department aligned to our anti-corruption strategy. And five, strengthening the oversight of the public works sector in terms of our concurrent mandate. Six, operationalization of a professional services function aligned to Chapter 9 of the National Development Plan, and outcome five of the medium-term strategic framework, as I mentioned, to create the necessary capacity for the state and the country within the built environment. Secondly, strengthening the department's research and policy capacity in collaboration with our entities. And eight, improving delivery to prestige clients. Colleagues, I move over to the internal environment and our business improvement projects. These are some of the business improvement projects that we have in the department that underpin our turnaround. The first one is reduction in fraud and corruption. We have a four-pronged strategy that, beside investigation, is also designed to detect fraud and corruption and also prevent fraud and corruption by introducing internal controls in areas of higher risk. We also have the Service Delivery Improvement Program, which the DG spoke about in his opening remarks, where we are looking at all the external factors driving service delivery in the department and seeking to improve the quality of service we deliver. And also we have a robust change management strategy in order to align to and to have everybody on board with respect to the change the department is undergoing with respect to the turnaround. In the internal environment, we also prepare customized performance indicators for the public works sector. These are performance indicators that measure the performance of the public works sector throughout the 9 provinces, and it's something that is led by the National Department of Public Works. Chairperson and members of the committee, moving to the performance environment, one of the challenges we have with respect to the Expanded Ward Public Works program is that we are seen to provide the leadership in implementing projects in a labor-intensive manner, which is what Expanded Public Works is about. And we are also there to provide support to implementing bodies to report accurately and completely with respect to jobs created. And we are providing this kind of support. And we see this as a necessary element of the Expanded Public Works program going forward in terms of the end goals of the program. So we also conduct certain monitoring and evaluation, and we provide support to implementing bodies, ensuring that their projects are labor-intensive and they report completely and accurately into the system. We are also providing support to ensure that the implementing bodies are able to achieve their targets by youth and full-time equivalents, given that some of our targets going forward are intended to meet certain minimum targets with respect to subcategories for creation of work opportunities for women and the youth. We are also implementing in the year ahead new recruitment guidelines to ensure that there is credibility with respect to the recruitment process and uniformity across all sectors in the process of recruiting EPWP participants. We also coordinate the PEP IMC, which is chaired by the Deputy President, and the Department will continue to do that. And we are also managing intergovernmental relations in a coordinated manner. And as part of this, we are giving greater attention to coordinating technical MINMEC subcommittees, such as GIAMA, which is the act which regulates the management of immovable assets at national and provincial government, the joint teams, as well as the IDMS forums. IDMS is the infrastructure delivery management system, which is focused on the delivery of infrastructure in the public sector. So I make mention of item 7, which is the effective coordination, because we don't have a Public Works Act. And public works is a concurrent function, giving need for effective intergovernmental relations in that particular space to ensure we have a common view of service delivery of public works between national, provincial, and local governments. Finally, with respect to management practices, we have what we call the Management Performance Assessment Tool. I'm sure members of the committee are familiar with the presidency having introduced this 4 or 5 years ago to measure the quality of management practices in the public service at the national and provincial levels. And 3 years ago, the department scored less than 30%. In the year 2016-17, the department scored 70% for the Management Performance Assessment Tool, which shows the quality and improvement in governance within the department, and we hope to take this to 100% over 5 years. Moving on to integration of risk into management processes, this is something we take very seriously, that risk management is not simply a compliance exercise, but it's a management of all the uncertainties we encounter on a daily basis to ensure we achieve our goals and objectives as a department. Risk management, identifying risks and uncertainties and taking care of them before they emerge, is a critical part of the way in which we do things. We are also developing a comprehensive ERP system or IT system. We discovered as part of our turnaround that one of the critical deficiencies we face is that we don't have sufficient information both to prepare accurate financial statements for audit purposes as well as management information to manage the department effectively, and our new SAGE Archibus system is intended to achieve that as an interim solution over a 3-year period. And irregular expenditure is something we take very seriously. There's a whole initiative to ensure that all goods and quotations are reviewed by the department before they are issued to a service provider to ensure compliance with the relevant prescripts. So that's something we take quite seriously, and we would investigate any case where there's non-compliance within 30 days and issue a report in 90 days. We also take quite seriously payment of suppliers within 30 days. We have what we call the Ria Patara system, where we record and track payments to suppliers. So over the medium term, we pay suppliers within a 30-day period 100% of the time. We are also engaging improvements within SCM by creating procurement frameworks as well as specialized bid adjudication committees, given the fact the department procures infrastructure through construction and sometimes through leasing, and these are special requirements which are very different from goods and services, and given that SCM is then central to the efficiencies in the department and our delivery to clients, we've created these special frameworks. Within the organizational environment, chairperson and members of the committee, a key intervention currently is our organizational structure. We currently engage in what we call a migration framework, where we're decommissioning the old structure and commissioning a new one. This is intended to ensure that we move from old to new in a regular manner, and we place people accordingly in terms of skill sets and the requirements of the structure going forward. There are various factors within our organizational environment which have informed the APP. We're focusing our operating model on a greater level on the transformation and regulation of the construction and property sectors as the department, the main vote. We are also focusing heavily on expanded public works program, as well as a concurrent function where we oversee the provincial as well as municipal levels to a lesser degree in terms of the conduct of the public works function. We also implement, as we mentioned, the prestige function, and also we've introduced recently the professional services function to create capacity in the built environment profession. Chairperson and members, moving on to the next slide, this is a little different, and we've put the slide forward because of the needs of this committee, seeing things from a provincial perspective as well. And what you have here is a EPW performance against the annual work opportunities target for 2016-17. And you can see the numbers are reflected from municipalities and provincial departments. And of 728,000 work opportunities, those reported was just under 500,000. And you can see that Eastern Cape is the best performing province at 92%, whilst the Gauteng is at 49% and Northwest at 37.9%. With respect to full-time equivalents, 204,000 work opportunities reported as opposed to a target of 271,000, and the best performing province being KZN at 96.5%, and a poor performing province there being Limpopo at 46.9%. Moving forward is the provincial perspective on the EPWP integrated grant for provinces. The allocation is 402 million for 2016-17. 395 million and 416 million and 451 million in the outer years. Moving on to the expenditure as of 31st March 2017, it's been 100% expenditure in terms of transfers as a percentage of the allocation, and the expenditure to date 388 million, and that represents a 97% expenditure on an integrated grant by the provinces. The social sector, EPWP incentive grant for provinces, the allocation at 359, 385, 407, and 430 million respectively over the MTF, and 100% was transferred to provinces in 2016-17, colleagues, and 97% of this budget was transferred, budget was in fact spent. Moving on to the social sector, EPWP incentive grant for provinces, as at March 2017, there is the breakdown in terms of numbers and the 97% spending over the provinces. And we see that all provinces are quite high, with Free State, Gauteng, Limpopo, as well as Western Cape at 100%. So this is to give the committee a flavor for the provinces in terms of EPWP. Moving over to our planning process, I won't dwell on this too much, except to say that we have a very organized planning process, which commences in June every year, which is essentially this particular week, with a policy statement by the Minister of Public Works giving us a strategic direction for 2017-18. And we commence our planning process today, and this week, in fact, for tabling of our plan in March next year. So we have a very drawn-out process, if one may call it, with extensive consultation, which culminates in March next year in tabling. Moving on to the budget of the department on slide 25, you have the total budget for 2016-17 of 6.5 billion that increased incrementally to 2017-18 at 7 billion or 7.038 billion. Administration just under 500 million, and you can see expanded public works program just under 2.5 billion. And the biggest item in our budget is just under 4 billion is our It essentially transfers. It's located under the property and construction policy branch. But it's under 4 billion. The majority of the funds in the department, the main vote is on transfers at just under 4 billion. Moving on to an economic classification view of that very same budget, we can see that the current payments is 960 million, which is compensation at 486 million and goods at 473 million, and transfers and subsidies at over 6 billion in total, of which 1.472 billion go to provinces and municipalities, 3.9 billion to departmental agencies, the primary beneficiary there being the expanded of the property management trading entity, and we also have foreign governance and international organizations, which we can discuss later. It's for the maintenance of welfare and other memorials abroad. Non-profit institutions to the EPWP, 624 million, and households at 10 million. And we have a small amount for machinery and equipment. Moving on with the budget, Chairperson and members of the committee, I want to say that the focus areas of our budget are quite clear, but what needs to be recognized is that the average growth in the allocation to the Department of the NTEF is 6.7%. The budget reduction for 2017-18 amounts to 183 million rand, which is 2.5% of our baseline, and 168 million in 2018-19, which is 2.2% of the baseline, and 163 million reduction in 2019-20, which is a 2% reduction, and the bulk of these reductions are against transfers and subsidies. And in our budget as a whole, 86.4% of our budget is allocated, in fact, to transfers and subsidies to our various entities. Looking at where these reductions took place, Chairperson and members of the committee, on slide 28, compensation decreased, as articulated in the slide, 5.4, 2.7, and 6.2 million over the next 3 years. The budget for goods and services decreased by 4.2, 52.5, and 53 million over the next 3 years. The PMTE budget transfer has been decreased by 38.7, 41, and 43.4 million over the next 3 years. And conditional grants, which are the integrated grants, transfer budget has been decreased by 53.2, 61, and 41.4 million rands over the next 3 years. We've also had increases in our baseline of a lesser amount, which then translate into a net decrease of our budget, but the increases relate to payment for capital assets, and we've had an increase of 24 million, 25.5, and 26.9 million in our budget for the next 3 years. Other areas of increase on slide number 30 include operationalization of Agrima South Africa. This is a new entity. Agrima used to operate within the CSIR in the past. It's now become a fully-fledged public entity, given the fact that our transfers in the past to Agrima used to be classified as unauthorized expenditure. Now, they will receive 16.9 and 17.8 million over the next 3 years to enable them to operationalize into a fully fledged public entity. We also have funds set aside for the capacitation of internal audit of 3.4, 3.6 and 3.9 million to enable our internal audit function to expand to our, in accordance with our needs. And we also have for our new branch called Professional Services, creating capacity in the built environment. These are a nominal amounts of 4.7, 4.9, and 5.2 million rands over the next 3 years. Chairperson and members of the committee, in terms of the earmarked funds, this slide here includes a number of areas where funds are locked in for a particular purpose, and the total amount locked in for 2017-18 is 6.5 billion rand, which indicates the majority of our budget in public works is locked in earmarked funds. At the top there, out of interest is EPWP non-state sector of 595 million, and the other significant amount is the property management trading entity at 3.758 billion rand, the majority of which is the augmentation of the TMT of 678 million, also infrastructure at 748 million on behalf of the department. We also have the integrated grant for municipalities towards the bottom of 691 million and conditional grants to provinces, the total of which is 781 million. Of interest is also compensation, given the fact that government has undertaken an initiative to contain compensation costs. We have a ceiling of 486 million for compensation as well. That is part A of our plan, Chairperson. I move on to part B, and this fortunately would be easier to get through in a shorter period of time. So I don't know if we have a disturbance that I should be bothered with. I'll just talk to you, Chairperson. I'm moving on to Part B. Part B includes our performance information. And I'm on slide 34, and I'm into Program 1. And with respect to Program 1, the governance process, we have fewer indicators in Program 1 that measure a greater number of pulses in the department. The first one is the index change for management practices. This is based on the MPET standard of the presidency. This measures between 35 and 40 different management standards in one index. And our target for 2017-18, the year ahead, is 3.8. This is 3.8 out of 4. So we're working hard towards that. We believe this will give us good credibility and also measure the extent of governance improvement within the organization. The second area of measurement for corporate services and governance is the commencement of investigation within 30 days. We make a commitment that we'll commence any fraud and corruption investigation when a valid allegation is received. We'll commence an investigation within 30 days. We also have a measurement for the number of interventions recommended for fraud risk management. As we mentioned in our opening areas of our APP, we're focusing our efforts very heavily on preventing fraud and corruption, given that we've had hundreds, if not thousands, of investigations in the last 3 years, and we've held hundreds of officials to account for various irregularities. Our view is that going forward, we should now focus more heavily on prevention. And we are introducing 4 major interventions per annum with respect to prevention of fraud and corruption. We also have a measure for the change in the irregular expenditure baseline. And in the 2017-18 year, we want to reduce the baseline by 80%. We want to settle compliant invoices within 30 days, 100% within 30 days. We also want to award 65% of all bids awarded within the required 56-day period. And with respect to quotations, we wish to award 88% of quotations within the 30-day period. I will pass by the quarter targets and move on to the next program, which is the corporate services area. We also want to fill 100% of our prioritized posts within 6 months. We want to introduce one module at 3 regional offices in respect of our IT systems. And with respect to ERP systems developed for the public works sector, we want to assess the current ERP in 3 provinces. We also want to ensure that 100% of all fraud and corruption misconduct cases are subject to disciplinary proceedings, and want to ensure that 100% of default judgments against the department are avoided through our legal services. Moving on to the budget for Program 1, Chairperson and members, the total budget for next year, or current year in fact, which is 2017-18, is $493,810,000, of which the largest part for this corporate services of $238 million. From an economic classification point of view, the current payments are $480 million, transfers $5.2 million, and payments to capital assets $8.3 million. Moving over to an analysis of this particular budget, the bulk of the expenditure is on compensation of employees, and there's not much to say with the budget for Program 1, given that it is minimal and very much consistent with previous years. Chairperson, I move on to Program 2 now, and our performance indicators there talk to 2 particular sub-programs. The one is the intergovernmental relations function, and the second one is the function that talks to building capacity in the built environment. The first performance indicator is a number of performance review reports for the sector program of action presented to MINMEC, and the target is 2 reports, such reports for next year. Secondly is a number of agreements signed for joint service delivery with provinces and municipalities. There are 20 agreements of this nature targeted for the year 2017-18, and Chairperson, members of the committee would know that given the the consensual nature of the intergovernmental relations function, these agreements are critical to achieve that joint cooperation in service delivery at the different levels of government. Item number 3 is the number of reviews conducted on intergovernmental governance structures. 2 such reviews are targeted and 2 policy frameworks developed for the public works sector for 2017-18. With respect to restoring the skills pipeline in the built environment, there are a number of beneficiaries targeted for different types of training, and the performance indicator talks to these in terms of the young professionals program, the internship program, learnership program, and training and trainee and other management training for targeted individuals. And in the year ahead, 1,075 beneficiaries participating in the DPW skills development program are targeted, and 233 in the bursary program. Moving on to another area, also within the area of building state capacity in the built environment profession, is to introduce asset management tools that enable the establishment of institutional capacity to manage public infrastructure, and 2 asset management tools approved for the acquisition phase are targeted in the year ahead. I move then on to the area of the budget for Program 2, which is 60 million for the year ahead. Monitoring, evaluation, and reporting is 14 million, and IGR coordination at 46 million. In the year ahead, Chairperson, out of interest, we would want to split this program to reflect the 2 sub-programs. Currently, it does not. We just signed a submission this morning to ask Treasury to split this program into the IGR function and the professional services function. From an economic point of view, on slide 51, the 60 million reflects current payments of 54 million and transfers of 5 million together with the 725,000 for the machinery and equipment. The average growth in allocation to the program over the medium term is 30%, and the increase is mainly due to the operationalization of this dedicated professional services branch. And the bulk of the funding for this new branch for professional services is going to come from reallocations from other branches and other areas of the business, given the overall budget cut that the department and all departments, in fact, have suffered. Moving on to Program 3, Chairperson and members of the committee, is our flagship extended public works program. The first performance indicator is the number of work opportunities reported in the reporting system. And in 2017-18, 1.4 million work opportunities are targeted for reporting. The second performance indicator is a sub-indicator, in fact, is the percentage EPWP participation among designated groups, which include women, youth, and persons with disabilities reported on the very system. And the target in the year ahead is 55% youth, 55% women, and 2% persons with disabilities. We are also generating 2 data quality assessment reports in the year ahead, given that the monitoring and evaluation function of the EPWP and the credibility of the information reported into the system is key to what they do. So there will be 2 reports in this regard they'll generate. What is also critical is the kind of support they provide to implementing bodies. And in the year ahead, 350 contracted non-profit organizations will be given support by EPWP in terms of how they report and in terms of how they reorganize what they do to make it labor-intensive and amenable for EPWP purposes. They will also provide support to 290 public bodies with respect to technical reporting. This is the quality of reporting, ensuring that people who are reported on the system actually qualify for reporting purposes in the system, and we have available information at the other end of the line. And they will also develop 1 framework on sector convergence in the year ahead. Moving on to their budget, they have a budget of 2.4 billion rand expanded public works program on slide number 57. The M&E work that they do takes up 70 million of that. The infrastructure sector, 1.1 billion. Operations, 1 billion. Partnership support, 68 million. And the PEP IMC, 7.5 million. So from an economic point of view, compensation is 156 million, goods and services 158, and over 2 billion is towards transfers and subsidies, 1.4 billion to municipalities and provinces, non-profit organizations at 623 million, and households at 168 million. That takes up the 2.4 billion for the year ahead. Moving on to an analysis of this particular budget, the focus is obviously going to be on coordinating the extended public works program. The bulk of the budget goes towards performance-based incentives to the provinces and municipalities and non-profit organizations to incentivize them to increase job creation efforts in the program. There is an average increase of 5.3% between 13-14 and 14-15, and this was due to the allocation of additional funding in the form of performance incentives to eligible public bodies in the creation effort in support of Phase 3 of the Extended Public Works Program. Colleagues, moving on to Program 4, which is called the Property and Construction Industry Policy and Research Program. We call it the Policy Branch. Their objective is research and develop policies and legislative prescripts for the construction and property sectors, and through that medium is to transform or influence the transformation of these sectors. There are three important areas that one can touch on and move forward from. The first one is the Public Works Bill submitted to Parliament. And at the end of this financial year, the draft Public Works White Paper should be presented for public comment. That's the target. And this Public Works White Paper will then serve as the input into the new Public Works Bill and Act down the line. Given the fact that it's a concurrent function, this is there to occupy that space. So this is an important initiative for the department going forward. And we also have amended CIDB, the Construction Industry Development Board Act, as well as the Council for Built Environment Act, which we intend to draft. We already have for the CIDB the amendment bill, developer consultation. For the CBE, we have a revised built environment policy, which we've submitted to our minister for approval, and it will come to the committee. But ultimately, at the end of 2017-18, there must be stakeholder consultation on draft CIDB amendment bill, as well as the draft CBE amendment bill, given the number of years that have expired since these organizations were floated in law. We've learned a few lessons and want to then reshape the direction they take going forward. So that would cover our policy branch, and their budget is $3.9 billion, which is somewhat misleading in the sense that it does not belong to the branch, but we use this program to carry all our transfers, given the fact that we transfer to other entities because they carry out one policy or the other on our behalf. And the bulk of this budget is for the PMTE at $3.758 billion, which we discussed in our second presentation. And we also have the CIDB and the CBE at $74 million and $48 million respectively. Moving to economic classification perspective of this, we also have SECLEP, which is the only built environment professional council that we fund directly with the 120,000, small amount, but some of our BEPCs don't have enough members to sustain themselves, and SECLEP, the South African Council for the Landscape Architectural Profession, is one of those. And going forward, we think about merging them with another professional council or assisting them to include the membership to become sustainable. Moving on to Program 5, which is a prestige policy function. They exist to improve the delivery of services to prestige clients, and one of the critical interventions for this particular function is norms and standards. They deal with the judiciary, the executive, and the legislature. Norms and standards drive what they do. It articulates what beneficiaries are entitled to receive and what they are not entitled to receive, when and how they should receive that. And in the year ahead, there will be four new prestige policies approved. There will also be a target of 15 working days to resolve mechanical breakdowns after a logging of a complaint by any prestige client. There's also a target to resolve emergency breakdown within 2 days after logging of a complaint by a prestige client. That's in terms of efficiency indicators. With respect to state events, they are planning to support 8 state events in the year ahead. And they were also introduced another efficiency indicators that within 60 working days of a request, they will provide office and residential accommodation to prestige clients upon request. So moving on to their budget is 99 million rand, 89 of which is accommodation and prestige accommodation and state functions, and they also make available 10 million through the Parliamentary Villages Management Board. The economic classification would indicate that the biggest item here is goods and services at 54 million rand. Part C, just to give you an overview of Part C. Part C is primarily our links to other plans. We have a service delivery improvement plan, Chair and members of the committee. The one area of the SDIP is the EPWP. The EPWP, as we mentioned earlier, have introduced the recruitment guidelines for EPWP to ensure that the project remains credible in terms of how it selects beneficiaries, and the recruitment guidelines will be implemented in the year ahead. In our prestige area, the prestige portfolio is now developing a better ratio of client targets, which means that there are fewer project managers servicing or greater project managers servicing a certain number of clients. They are also having a service index that they will introduce in the year ahead to ensure they improve the quality of services to prestige clients, and they are also improving the quality of the SCM processes to ensure that the SCM clients throughout the department receive a better service. Moving on to our strategic risk, Chairperson and members of the committee, this is a critical slide for us. These are our strategic risks in terms of what keeps our minister, deputy minister and DG awake at night. We also have an operational risk register which we don't present here. We present our strategic risk in terms of this is what keeps our senior officials awake at night. The first is a loss of state resources through fraud and corruption. We fight fraud and corruption quite heavily given the recent history of the department and the reputation as a corrupt organization. And this directly affects service delivery. So we have our finger on this pulse. Second is a breach of, is a compliance risk, is a breach of all the different legislative prescripts that the department is responsible for complying with. One example is organizational health and safety that results in death. So this is quite serious. And of course the other is GIAMA, which talks directly to our core mandate. Thirdly is a failure to provide quality accommodation within time and cost, and that also relates to our PMTE, is that we are failing with our core mandate of providing accommodation within time and cost. Fourthly is our failure to influence the sector with regard to transformation. To what extent have we brought about skills development, triple BE and job creation in the sectors for which we are responsible? And to what extent have we brought about change there? First is the failure by the DPW and PMTE to achieve our EPWP, triple BE and skills development targets. Sixth is a lack of cooperation that enables seamless delivery within the sector. As we mentioned earlier, we have the concurrent function of the provinces, the national department, and the municipalities working and converging in the same direction, or are we working towards a different, uncommon goal? And seven is the failure to integrate business information, which is essentially our IT system. Our failure to implement IT systems has created huge difficulties, both in terms of financial as well as management reporting. Moving on to slide number 75, just to give you an overall overview, our conditional grants include the EPWP integrated grant to provinces, the integrated grant to municipalities, the EPWP grant to provinces, as well as a non-state sector wage subsidy. Moving on, slide 77, these are our public entities, the CIDB, the Construction Industry Development Board, which is responsible for the development as well as regulation of that industry, the Council for the Built Environment, which oversees and coordinates the initiatives of the Six Built Environment Professional Councils, the Independent Development Trust, which is responsible for the delivery of social infrastructure for government, Agrima South Africa, which certifies non-standardized building products and materials, and then, of course, we have the Six Built Environment Professional Councils at the bottom. All of these entities, all 10 of them, the department is responsible for ensuring that their planning and what they set out to do is aligned to the priorities of government, in addition, of course, to their own objectives and the requirements of their very own profession. Chairperson, I've concluded the presentation, and after the thank you note, we have additional information for the interest of members. This is the provincial spread on slide number 79. Of EPWP training opportunities on short courses and skills programs, and you can see this is under 25,000, and from the Eastern Cape to the Free State at the bottom, the Eastern Cape is the biggest beneficiary of 5,000 such opportunities, and at the bottom there you have 1477, which is the Free State, leading to a total of 24,000. Then we also have a provincial spread of learnerships, and this just under 500 learnerships. These are EPWP training opportunities on learnerships. And then finally, the last slide is enterprise development, our progress in this regard. We have 316 enterprise development initiatives across all the 9 provinces, and the spread for 2016-17 is articulated on the last slide for your information. And Chairperson, that brings me to the end of the presentation for the main vote, Department of Public Works. Chair, should I pause or should we just continue? If you have some mercy on me. I can continue if you wish, Chair.
The arrangement was that you continue with vote, but I'm just worried you almost took 1 hour just on this one. If you remember, initially I said for vote I give you 1.5 hours. I don't know if you'll be able then to do it.
Chair, I'll try and make it in 45 minutes.
45.
I'll keep my watch in front of me.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much. Chairperson, I can move directly into the Part A section, and some of these slides are similar and others different from the main vote. I think the global overview and the South African overview are quite similar, and I won't repeat those, except that we were expecting difficult times. With regard to the construction sector, as we mentioned, the increase in social infrastructure spend by government, including those in housing, schools, and roads, was seen to have created an opportunity for growth in the construction sector. With respect to the property sector, there has been a shift in slide 7 in office space preference, where central nodes have been experiencing a decline in demand for older nodes in the past year, and many old office buildings in these areas are being renovated and converted to accommodation for students from surrounding academic institutions, and these trends are likely to continue in most cities across the country as businesses are moving out of CBDs and also given the rising demand for student accommodation. With respect to our external environment, there are some areas where we respond to external influences. The one is availing land for socio-economic development. No, there's a PMT presentation, it's another presentation. Yes, ma'am, I can see you have the public works one, the one I've just done. There's another one. PMT, yes. PMT, yes.
Chairperson, it is there electronically, because I do have it. It was sent to us.
Can you deal with directly with the...
Part B. Yes, Chair, I'll go to Part B. Part B, performance indicators. Program 1, administration. Chairperson and members of the committee, the first performance indicator is the percentage of compliant invoices settled within 30 days of receipt of invoice. And in 2017-18, the target is 100% compliant invoices settled within 30 days of receipt of invoices. Number of revenue generation sources incubated, that's the second performance indicator. In the year 2017-18, two newly identified revenue sources have been targeted for incubation. Indicator number 3 is a percentage of bids awarded within 56 working days of closure of a 10-day advertisement, and the target for 2017-18 is 65% bids awarded within 56 working days of closure of the 10-day advertisement. Target number 4 is the percentage of quotations awarded within 30 days from requisition date, and the target is 88% of quotations awarded within 30 working days. Target number 5 is percentage savings for built environment consultants, and in the year ahead, 2017-18, there's a target of 24% savings for built environment consultants as opposed to the previous year's expenditure. I move over to the budget for Program 1 on slide number 29. The total budget for administration for 2017-18 is 761 million, and the spending focus of the medium term is on management, finance, and SCM. And the bulk of the expenditure is for compensation of employees. The turnaround program will not receive any funding for in 2018-19 and 19-20 financial years. It's being phased out, so this year ahead is the last year of turnaround funding. So there has to be a reprioritization from other areas to fund strategic priorities, given the current cost pressures. Funding allocated against the turnaround is used mainly for development of an operations management framework, to develop a PMTE finance model, and also the streamlining of the procurement process for leases, infrastructure, and facilities management. Moving on to Program 2 of the PMTE, it's called Real Estate Investment Services. Real estate, the planning and investment management functions reside within the Real Estate Investment Management Services, and their objective is to ensure that the user asset management plans are produced in compliance with the relevant prescripts. And in terms of that objective, the number of user asset management plans received from user departments is targeted for 42 user plans received from departments for 2017-18. Chairperson and members of the committee, just to emphasize this point, the user action management plan will articulate all the infrastructure requirements of a client so that we don't plan and deliver infrastructure in the blind or in an unplanned manner. That these user asset management plans come together to give us a strategic picture of what our clients require so we can plan in a methodical way going forward. Target number 2 is the number of sign-off infrastructure worklists. 10 such worklists are targeted for sign-off in the year ahead. And then I move over to the other sub-program is called precinct planning. And in our precinct planning, the first performance indicator is the number of government precinct development plans aligned with identified municipal, urban, and rural integrated development plans. So these three precinct development plans aligned with the municipal integrated development plans in the year ahead. The second target is the number of sites established for development, and we're targeting 3 sites for establishment for development purposes. Target number 3 in the sub-program is the number of concept designs completed by identified user departments, and 4 such designs are targeted in the year ahead. The third sub-program, which intends to increase the value of our portfolio. This is where investment decisions are made. The first target is the percentage of feasibility studies completed within scheduled time frames. 85% is targeted in terms of a percentage of feasibility studies completed within scheduled time frames. The second target is the percentage of valuations completed within time frames. 85% of valuations are targeted to be completed within the scheduled time frames. Third indicator is the percentage of responsive disposal requests processed by the year end. 85% of disposal requests are targeted to be processed by March 2018. 4 is the custodial asset management plan submitted to National Treasury. 1 custodial asset management plan submitted to Treasury. Just to dwell on this point a moment, Chair and members, the custodial plan is a conglomeration or an aggregate of all the user asset management plans of our clients. And the department consolidated into a custodial asset management plan as the custodian, and we submit this to Treasury. That is the instrument which shows our infrastructure delivery plans for the 3 years going ahead. It's a custodial asset management plan, and there's a target in the APP as well. 5 is the number of buildings performance measured in terms of identified performance areas, and in this regard, 600 buildings are being measured for performance in the year ahead. And this is critical to inform maintenance and other plans of all buildings where condition and other assessments must be done before we conduct any plans going forward. Moving away from the performance indicators into the budget, this program is spending 122 million in the year ahead, And the spending focus will be mainly on user demand management in terms of user asset management plans, planning and precinct development, where we're developing these precinct plans in municipalities and provinces, as well as on investment management. An MTF allocation of $32 million will be spent on the completion of concept designs, establishment of sites for precinct development, compilation of the user asset management plan, completion of valuation and feasibility studies, and the assessment of buildings going forward, as we've mentioned. Moving on to Program 3. Program 3 is the Construction Project Management Branch, headed in the acting capacity by my colleague on my right. And they develop detailed construction plans that direct the execution of construction projects. So this program is essentially measuring the delivery of infrastructure by means of construction, by construction projects. The first target is the number of pre-approved infrastructure project designs, and in the year ahead, they're targeting 117 approved infrastructure project designs. The second target is the number of approved infrastructure projects ready for tender. 174 approved infrastructure projects are targeted for readiness from a tender point of view by March 2017-18. The number of infrastructure sites headed over for construction, 117 such sites are targeted for handing over in the year ahead for construction purposes. Number four is the number of infrastructure projects completed. They're targeting to complete 106 infrastructure projects in a year ahead. The number of infrastructure projects completed within agreed construction period, they're targeting 85 of these projects within time. So not all projects take place or are concluded on time. Over a period of time, they want to achieve all of them, but they're targeting 85 projects on time and 85 within budget in the year ahead. With respect to EPWP, 11,250 EPWP work opportunities are being created through our own construction projects. And with respect to the backlog of infrastructure projects, 75% reduction of the backlog is targeted in the year. Moving over to the budget of this program, the budget is 4.9 billion rand, of which compensation is simply 174 million, with the bulk being spent on capital, planned capital, which is 3.5 billion we get back from our capital. But we also spend 1.250 billion on non-recoverable, which is refurbishments, which we fund as a department. The bulk of the expenditure for this program, as we mentioned, Chairperson, is on a capital infrastructure and compensation of employees. And the total current expenditure is expected to reduce over the MTF as the turnaround strategy is planned to be completed by 2017-18. Moving over to program number four, real estate management services. This program here delivers infrastructure through leasing in from the private sector, but it's also responsible for leasing out government departments at a profit, if one can call it that. The first target, the first objective I should mention is to provide functional lease accommodation to user departments through leasing, where we lease in private sector buildings. And the first target is the percentage of lease agreements signed within the prescribed time frame, and they're targeting 60% in the year ahead. They also want to realize 100 million rand worth of savings on identified private leases in the year ahead, and also want to award 25% of new leases to black-owned companies. Moving over, they want to reduce the number of private leases for the security cluster SEPs, defense, and also Home Affairs to a certain extent. Six private leases are targeted for termination in the year ahead in favor of the use of government buildings for security reasons. We also in the year ahead want to increase by 20% the revenue through letting of state-owned properties. In the year ahead, we also want by a quantum of 60% to let out vacant and surplus state-owned properties. Seven, we also in the year ahead wish to increase revenue through rentals at the harbors. And we also in the year ahead want 100% of DEF certified Operation Pakisa Ocean Economy leasing request to be signed by ourselves within 12 months of the receipt of a request. So we want to conclude lease agreements at the small harbors with quick turnaround times. Moving on to the budget of this particular program. The budget for this program is 11 billion rand, of which the bulk is on operating leases of 4.8 billion, and also municipal services, which is a significant amount of 4.8 billion rand. And we also pay 1.4 billion on rates and taxes. So that's where. Yes, it's 10 billion at 2017-18 and then moved 11 billion the following year. Yes, correct, Chairperson. Goods and services expenditure for this program is 46% of the total spending, which is quite significant. And both the operating leases and municipal services are funded on a cost recovery basis, which means we get it back from our clients. Moving over to program 5 is the real estate information and registry services. This program has been significant in recent years, given that the absence of an asset register is as good as the absence of IT systems in an organization where there's no information. In the case of an asset register, the absence of information completely precludes the department from managing its portfolio in an optimal manner, because there's simply no information on the assets that it owns in its portfolio. And this is something, it's a hurdle we've managed to climb in the last 2 to 3 years. The first target year is the percentage of approved disposals, process for transfer, and target is 70% of those disposals process for transfer, all in the way or the means and towards an end of maintaining a compliant and accurate register. We're also targeting 100% of immovable assets updated on the register for completed infrastructure projects, which would mean additions onto the register. We are also targeting the vesting of 800 land parcels in a year, the chairperson. The vesting process is still continuing, where the ownership between the national and provincial in particular is being established, and the process continues. The strategic objective for this program, which deals with the asset register, is to provide guidance and support to other custodians in the compilation of a compliant immovable asset register. And, of course, the municipalities are custodians, Transnet is a custodian, DLR is a custodian, but the custodians we're referring to mainly is our own family, the public works family. So we provide support to the 9 provincial departments of public works to develop compliant asset registers, and in the year ahead we support all 9 of them to develop a compliant register. And also, in the year ahead, we'll ensure that toward our end goal of creating a single asset register for the country, that we bring the asset registers of 2 provinces onto a national repository for an asset register. So 2 provinces will come on board in the year ahead to form part of a national asset register. The budget is not much, because it's more the spending on compensation of employees and the DPW immovable asset register project, which is a transfer, and the total amount is 54 million rand. And the spending is mostly on the areas that are articulated in the 72 million, and the bulk is spent on compensation. And we're utilizing specialists from the outside to assist us to develop the register. The total MTF is expected to reduce also here because of the turnaround program coming to an end. So we need to sustain this program post the turnaround, because we don't have the luxury of the additional funds. Moving on to program 6, the facilities management, they have the onerous responsibility of keeping all our buildings in good shape, and they work against what one would call the grain, because of the huge expense associated with maintenance of buildings, that the revenue is not there to maintain buildings to the standard that one would aspire towards. But nonetheless, their objective is to manage maintenance programs in accordance with their approved plans. The first target is the number of facilities with maintenance contracts in place. That's where we start. And we're targeting 450 such facilities in the year ahead. Percentage of unscheduled reported maintenance incidents reported within a grid time frame. This is an efficiency indicator we want to resolve. 10% of the emergency reported incidents within time frames. Then also term contracts awarded to black companies. We want to award 30% of term contracts to black companies. So we work to a greater extent with term contracts. We have a more organized, formal way of responding to maintenance requests. 4 relate to energy consumption and energy saving. In the year ahead, 300 million kilowatt hours reduction in energy consumption is identified for saving. With respect to energy, 2.2 million kilowatt hours of renewable energy is targeted for our own generation. With respect to water, 4.8 million kiloliter reduction in water consumption for our portfolio is being targeted. And those cover our facilities management and our energy management plans. Moving on to the budget for this program, in the year ahead, their budget is $3.2 billion. And it stays on similar numbers in the outer years, in 2018-19, also $3.2 billion with a 5 million rand increase. Compensation of 571 million, and the bulk is on repairs, 896 million, and maintenance, 1.2 billion. These are areas we want to manage better in the future, with a better organized way of approaching the maintenance of buildings and moving away from emergency maintenance to more organized contract-based facility management contracts. And essentially, this program that targets articulates that move in that direction. And like we mentioned, the spending focus of the medium term is on the scheduled maintenance program to manage and minimize unscheduled maintenance and reduce consumption on municipal services. The MTF budget of 6.9 million will be prioritized to implement scheduled maintenance projects for prioritized buildings and resolve unscheduled maintenance incidents within agreed time frames. Chairperson, that covers the PMTE. It also talks to the narrative in any event that I didn't cover. And then we go to Part C. Part C commences on page 62. This is the new replacement and upgrades and additions, and these are the total amounts, but I'll move from page 63 onwards and say page 63 onwards. And say, Chairperson, on all these pages, those three zeros on the top, just ignore them, because they would make these amounts equal to the national budget. Clearly, they're not correct. So what we do there, these are the project details. We know the NCOP, and this particular select committee is interested in the provincial-based statistics, and we presented them for the long-term infrastructure plan, new replacement, upgrades, and additions. Gauteng, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, the projects and the numbers are stated on these particular slides. And I move over onto slide 64, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, Northwest, Limpopo, Free State, KwaZulu-Natal, all of them on the page six, slide 66 as well. Then if I move to slide 67, I'm talking about planned maintenance current. And in the year 2017-18, it's 896 million. And these are the highlights from slide 68 onwards, the planned maintenance in the Eastern Cape, such as the complete repairs and renovations of Amtata Training College, to the bottom of the page, which is the repairs and renovations of the sewer system at the Bloomsbury Complex, provincial-based information. Continuing, page 70, NITL program, repair and maintenance of electrical and mechanical insulation for 24 months, and also the Peter Maritzburg old and new prison, maintenance of bulk electrical and mechanical insulation, as well as Westville prison, on slide number 69 of 116 million, is quite significant. And moving on to slide number 70, Limpopo, Mpumalanga. We also have the Polokwane Police Station, Stellarton Police Station there in the Mpumalanga province. And move on to page 71, Northwest, repair of the old police station in the Northern Cape, including the marriage quarters and the bachelor flat of 11 million. And we move on to slide number 72, the Western Cape. Conclusion day is on the office residential accommodation, the integrated FM contract for a five-year period we have there. And we also have the appointment of implementing agent for the proclaimed fishing harbors. Moving on to page 773, this is planned maintenance, capital and rehabilitation. It's planned maintenance. 2017-18, we've got a 1.1 billion rand budget, growing only incrementally over the outer years. And from page 72, we have the highlights there. We have the Queenstown Magistrate Court at 39 million. And also Eastern Cape, there's a consolidation of repairs there for 125 million. Heilbron Magistrate Court for 25 million. Moving on to slide number 75, there are others there as well. In KZN and Gauteng, Limpopo on slide number 76, a significant one is the reconstruction of offices, etc., and air conditioners damaged by fire of 97 million rand, and in Barberton prison for 67 million rand, also in an earthquake club, 43 million, and moving from there onto slide number 77, it continues 163 million. Repair and upgrading of the entire center there in the northwest, but I haven't got the name of the center, which I can see from my colleague on my right, and 106 million being spent on the total repair and renovation of the entire prison. My colleague will have the name of the prison there in the northwest. And then in the Western Cape, there's a refurbishment of this building, the NCOP building, including the HVAC. You can see the room is a bit cold. Electrical and other installations of 116 million of the NCOP building. So that's the overview of our infrastructure plan on a provincial breakdown basis. It's our planned maintenance, our unplanned maintenance, and our current maintenance, if one can call it that in layperson's terms. On page 79, Chairperson, we also have a service delivery improvement plan for the PMTE, and they added they're working on improving client relations. In fact, the interview we requested from the committee is precisely toward that, is to improve our understanding of all the stakeholders we service so we can provide a better level of service. With respect to accommodation provision, also with respect to leasing and improving the quality of accommodation, and also compliance with the green drop compliance and blue drop compliance with respect to water. So the PMT is targeted towards those particular areas. In terms of their risks, Chairperson, their financial viability and sustainability in the PMT as well as the other public entities is a huge concern for the department. We're watching them very closely. In fact, we're watching the PMT closely because they have a huge overdraft, but we're also watching the IDT very closely because the IDT also has its own financial challenges in addition to our PEPCs who sometimes cannot fund themselves adequately. And the second one is common to DPW, is loss of revenue through corruption. Third one is the compliance risk, which we discussed. The fourth one is our failure to conduct our mandate in terms of accommodation within time and cost. Then also, this is critical to the PMT, is a deterioration in the value of the state's portfolio of immovable assets. If we don't maintain it adequately, and the user charges we receive are not adequate, it is not adequate to maintain at the proper standard. That is why we lease from the outside. We pay more to lease from the outside than maintain our own buildings because our user charges are so small, we cannot keep the building at an adequate standard. So clients prefer to pay five times the amount and go and lease from the private sector. So we need to get this balance right, but a huge risk is the failure to maintain our buildings will result in a deterioration of the portfolio of assets of the state. Then also the last two I will discuss at DPW, which are failure to implement IT systems, and our failure to integrate our spatial planning activities with national, provincial, and local governments. Chairperson, that brings me to the end of the PMCE presentation as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, dear, and DJ and the team. Maybe perhaps in future we will have to have the department presenting, and then the following week, the PMPE presenting. Yeah. Members, on the 9th of this month, the presentation, I think there was also a delay from the department in the sending the presentation. We received the PMT presentation on the 9th. And then I phoned the committee secretary and said that we have only received the PMTE, we have not received the department presentation. In fact, then she followed up with the PLO, and the PLO sent her WhatsApp saying that let's talk on Monday. And then on Monday, only on Monday. Okay. Then on Monday, she was insisting that the document is true. But then I was in the constituent office. I couldn't argue with her because when I put through the document, I was convinced that it was only PMTE. And then we only received the department's
presentation on Monday. I don't know whether to say fortunately, then on Tuesday we didn't have the meeting. That allow us now to have more time, because we only received it on Monday. But then we had more time. But I saw, Martin, yesterday you again you sent the document, but you only sent the department, not the PMT. If you look at your emails, you didn't send the PMT. But what I want to suggest to the department, because I had asked the committee secretary to also talk to the committee secretary of the committees, the portfolio committees that we share departments, that when they send information to the portfolio committee, they also should just send us almost the same information. Fortunately, there's one PA who's consistent in doing that, the PA of the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Works. When I only got the PMTE, then I just looked for her name on my email. Then that's how I found the department's presentation. March. Yeah, around March. So if we had all received that presentation around March, it would have been easier for us to go through all this information. So I just want to indicate to the department, now we will be dealing with the annual report. I'm sure you'll be tabling annual report after August to the portfolio committee in the NA. I want to request that when you send that information, even if we're going to meet with you next year, because my experience is that we are only able to meet, though I was discussing with the committee secretary that we need to make sure that we deal with the annual report this year and not wait the following year. So I want to make a request so that by the time you are to come to present to us, all then you need to do is just to, in your presentation, also include, if you did not include in the information you sent to the NA, include the provincial spread like you've done with the report now. So it makes it easier. But also, I would like to also request members that in our pigeonholes, we do receive the APPs, even though they are not in the form of a slide presentation, but the information on the slide is from this particular book. They were given to us, they've got our name, Martina. I saw him pushing a trolley on the to our pigeonholes to put in our pigeonholes all these reports, the APPs. So I want to say perhaps if we can work with our own secretaries to make sure that they assist us. Similarly, with the annual report, they will come in the book form. We need to make sure that we get them and go through them whilst waiting for the power presentation. So that's what I wanted to suggest. Because I see that because of this confusion, some members only got the department's presentation. They don't have the PMTE. Others have PMTE, they don't have the department presentation. So I just wanted to make those few remarks. I will now allow members to ask questions. And all questions are cross department and PMTE. But you will indicate which entity that you focus on. Honorable Dikhale, any other hands? Honorable Makwebu, Honorable Faba, so far, okay. Honorable Chabang, Honorable Dekhan.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me thank the Deputy Minister and the team for the long presentation. Our apology, Chairperson, it's not that we don't receive the documents, it's just that this one last week, some of us were not here. So it's not that we are saying we are blaming Martina, but normally they will have a copy so that whoever comes in without it, then it's not going stranded. Thank you very much. I want to start with this one, the last presentation. On page 78, where you're talking about the planned maintenance capital for rehabilitation on the Western Cape province. I want to ask on this one of refurbishment of NCOP buildings, including the electrical and the electronic installation. This is a lot of money, Chairperson. And the electrical and electronic installation they're talking about is not an old thing. It was done on the last term towards the end. And it never functioned, Deputy Minister. We always used our hands when we were voting. And then now I'm seeing a lot of money. I don't know whether it's a report for the money used to install all those electronic installation, or is it the money that is going to maintain the machines? Because even today, they are not working. If ever they work, it will only be maybe from two provinces, Limpopo, Free State, but all the provinces was never helped by these machines. And on that note, Chairperson, I was going to advise the department that they take this money. Not that I have a relative in Free State, I don't have. But we were doing our previous for taking Parliament to the people, Deputy Minister. The toilets at schools are not working because there's no water. You go to the hospitals, you go to the clinics, there's no water in the toilets. The people are suffering and they are working very, very hard. But when it comes to the issue of water, it's just a problem. Blue Water is saying they are owing them a lot of money. The municipality is not paying. I don't know what is happening, but if we're going to take the whole lot of this money into the very same machines that are not working, and we are saying we're going to rehabilitate those machines, I don't think we are thinking straight on this one. On the first presentation, slide number 8. On the budget implication with regard to external environment, I was asking myself why the GDP growth is targeted on 1.2% and not 3%, because to me I don't see it assisting us to gauge the health of the country. Maybe if I can be assisted, why not 3% and 1.2%? And slide number 19, on the poor performance of my province, the province of Limpopo, I want to check with the department as to how do they assist the province with remedial lessons, maybe, that they are offering in order to improve all this poor performance of the province. Slide number 19. Yes. And on slide number 70, I want the presenter to unpack I was leading to open the slide, but now I did not frame my question well yet. Well, just help me in unpacking that. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Through you, Chairperson, I just want to ask from the minister and the team on the issue of the Deputy Minister. Thank you, Shabango. And on the issue of the expanded public works program. You know, I'm sure we all agree that this program is not only a critical, but it is a lifeline for the poor and unemployed. So the issue of, fairness in it is critical. I've seen the challenges you have mentioned, you know, that you're trying to make sure that the implementing bodies you know, they do the right thing, you hold them accountable, you know, they also, you know, make sure that there's uniformity across all provincial spheres. But the problem that we have, that has always been raised, you know, by the members of the public, it's not the program itself, it's the implementation by the implementing bodies, that it is done in a manner that is not fair. Because in local government, for instance, you find councillors sent down to their wards to recruit people. And then people are saying, if I'm not connected to that ward councillor, if I'm not a friend to that ward councillor, if I don't belong to the party, the political party of that ward councillor, then I'm doomed. And this is the problem. Now, you have indicated that 2016, 2017, you've put up, 2015, 16, you've put up guidelines. I would want through you, Chairperson, that you share those guidelines with us, because those guidelines must not only deal with the issue of women and children, you know, the percentages. Yes, that is important, but critical to that, it must demonstrate fairness and transparency, just like in other provinces, just like, you know, that is what is required. There has to be a system that demonstrates that, whether it's a database that people will know that my name is there, I'm number 26 in the list, so when they want at the next 10, I'm surely, you know, in that group, so that all people are given a chance, because we've got immense challenges of unemployment in this country. That's the first question. The second question, Chairperson, through you quickly, will be on the issue of good governance. I see how you're dealing with the issues of fraud and your targets, and that's commendable. And I must commend you on the issue of the four pillars of fraud prevention strategy that you're implementing, and the emphasis you're putting on that is prevention, detection, investigation, and resolution. And you are spending your resources on prevention. This is exactly what you should be doing, because when you prevent, you know, you become stronger, and you deal with fraud. You are proactive, as it were. But I want to know, what are the programs you're doing? How are you doing by prevention? Can you unpack that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Can I put my question up to the Thank you very much for that kind heart. It's page 70 on the prestige policy, where the department is talking about prestige, accommodation, and state functions. I just want to check if ever it can be easy for them to raise funds for state functions. I wanted to know what type of functions are they really budgeting for, and if ever, is the functions that maybe the department can be able to raise funds to run those functions, why don't we take this money to Limpopo province and create a job with this money? Or if ever is the functions that can be avoidable, that we can live without them, maybe we just leave them at all and take the money to Limpopo province. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Fa. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start by asking the Deputy Minister the easiest one, as he sits on the board with me on parliamentary villages. I see in Program 5 on page 70, 10 million to the Parliamentary Villages Management Board. I love that. When are we seeing that money? I would like to know what it's for. And yes, I think we're going to upgrade Acacia Park. But I see that's for the board. Just for other members to understand, it's for the board, apparently. Not upgrading. Okay, if we can get some information on that. Then, every meeting that I'm sitting here, and I've asked Minister Nessie the previous time, and that was on the police houses in Hartswater area, that is dilapidated. It's not even funny more driving past there. It is a sore eye in Hartswater. You know, people are talking about it. It's dilapidated between some very nice established houses, officers' houses, that the floors are broken out. There's nothing left of it. As well as a place called Doornhof at Warrington, next to the N12. Beautiful building that used to be there in the old days. If you look at it now, you can just as well break it down, because to do anything with it will cost too much. Those are just two of the things when we're talking about maintenance. I'm a bit worried that on the vacancy rate in critical positions, it's almost 39%, as I understand. I would like to get some information on that.
And then we talked about supply chain management and value for money. I would like to understand as well, Nkandla, what's happening there? Is it going on in Nkandla? Is it, as I said, coming from last week where the weather was good, it is actually quite bad in Cape Town. So we understand. It's the same with Nkandla. It was bad. It's even worse now. So just to please brief us on that. I think the others I will leave just for the next questions because I don't know how many questions. I've got about four other questions, Chairperson, and I would like rather to give other members. Okay. On page 20, if we, on the first presentation, with the EPW integrated grant, MTEF allocations, I need to just understand. I look at the allocation 2016 and then 17, and if I look, for instance, like at Northwest, it used to be 51 million, and then it goes to the next year to 14. But if you just look above that, the Northern Cape 17 to 20, why is it that it jumps so radical? And if you look at KwaZulu-Natal from 104, 2016 to 78, what is the reason that some of these are like Western Cape 31 million to 34, and then others are radically changing on this integrated grant for provincial for provinces, MTFE allocation? Then on page 28, I'm going to quickly get there on that same presentation. Compensation of employees. What I don't understand under the first one is 5.4 million for 2017, and then for 2018-19, 2.7, and then again 6.2 million. How do you get to these figures? Because it's not like it's 5 and 6 and 7. It's 5.4 for this year, and then all of a sudden half of it, and then double again. So. Is, but if you can just perhaps in my small mind explain it to me, as I'm not so into that one. And then as well with the asset register, we've been talking about asset registers since I've been here, I suppose 2009. And I must be quite honest. Then it says we are busy with the asset register. I know it's an ongoing thing. It's growing. But we need to get to a point where we at least know what the assets is. And I don't think we do have that at the moment. If you can give us some information on that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also reiterate the fact that we accept the apology that was rendered by the Deputy Minister. Thank you very much. My simple question is, when are you going to audit assets that belongs to the state? It seems as if you are moving at a very snail's pace. 23 years is a lot of time, taking into account that there are people who have looted the buildings, especially in Kwakwa and Clarence, that belong to the ex-ministers and the government. Then when coming to expropriation bill, it was returned back by the president, according to your saying. When it is going to be finalized? Then three, EPWP. It would seem that we are forever going to repeat that question, but we are going to formulate it in another way. Is EPWP program meant for a certain group of people? Because EPWP in the Free State is meant for a group of people that align itself with the ruling party. And people that are hired are cadres only. And that creates a lot of problems. And at the present moment, that now that there are many parties, they are fighting the councillors at the level of council, that you can't hire these people. You must use a mechanism that is going to include all the people. And still with the EPWP, last year the people of KwaZulu-Natal were doing all over saying that they want to be paid 4,000. Whereas in the Free State they are paid 650 or given food passes after month end. But in Gauteng they are getting a better salary, the people of the EPWP. We want to know the mechanism that you use to measure the payment. And you find them sitting all the way, don't win the job because they are underpaid. 23 years are down the line, you can't pay somebody 1,000 or 2,000. Do you know anything with regard to the construction of Winnie Mandela Clinic in the Free State? Which is in 3 years construction period, but only the foundation phase has been constructed. What is the problem? Where has millions of taxpayers' money gone? Last but not least, in the Free State, the contractors have not yet been paid for work well done for the province and the municipalities. This has resulted into their contractors having to collapse. When is the department going to apply Operation Patala to the province and other provinces? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. There will be a second round, but only for those members who have not asked questions. I'm now realizing because of the number of questions that have been asked, I will allow the department to respond to these questions, and then the second round will be for those members. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me start, but obviously the more detailed issues will be better handled by the colleagues from the department. The I'll decline the offer to answer the easy question as to why where the 10 million goes in terms of the parliamentary board, because we actually have the chair of that board present, and that's the DG. I just attend as an observer. So let me decline that. Let me deal with two basic issues, and then DDG Henderson might also want to add. At least two colleagues raised the issue of the expanded public works program, and particularly the issues around recruitment, and then you've also raised the issue of the compensation that is paid. Thank you for raising these issues, and it's not the first time that we're hearing them. The colleague from, I'm just saying that thanks for raising the issues around the recruitment of EPWP participants, yourself as well as the colleague from the Free State. We would appreciate if you could provide us with affidavits or details so that we can follow up. Because, like you, we are deeply concerned about this practice. Obviously it's happening, and it's criminal, actually, it's illegal to recruit people on the basis of that they belong to this or that political party or to this faction of this political party, which is often the case, and so forth, or which might be the case. I'm a little bit cautious, but agreeing that we need to be very vigilant about it. A little bit cautious because sometimes the allegations are made by different, and it's not just one political party. Obviously, there's one political party that has more councillors than others. And therefore tends to receive the allegation. But in the Western Cape, for instance, we get a similar allegations made by people from the ANC in this case, about DA-controlled councils and things like that. And we need to be sure that the allegations are not just people paying possibility or perception, because people are desperate to get some kind of work opportunity, and when they don't get it, then often there's suspicion and concern. So we need to be clear about it, but we need to be very, very firm. So we'd appreciate all colleagues, if they come across the issue, please
the more you can provide us with detail and affidavits and so on, that enables us to follow up. The guidelines that you referred to in 1516 are really guidelines about quotas in terms of youth participation, disabled participation, and so on. What we are busy with, and I thought it was finalized, Stanley, and it should be finalized, is recruitment guidelines to really deal, to provide guidance on this matter. The first of all, it's problematic if individual councillors, and I don't care which political party those councillors might come from, if individuals are involved in selection, because let's say it's an honest councillor who, in an honest way, selects the most deserving, or people who most desperately require the work opportunities. Given the levels of unemployment, there will be allegations and perceptions that X was chosen and not Y. And so the first message we're trying to get across is, councillors don't get into the space of individually selecting, because even if you're honest, you're going to, given the desperation that people have, you're going to attract criticism and allegations. And so in the recruitment guidelines, we suggest a number of paths around which, one, there could be, in some cases, the indigent list is used, in some cases. In other cases, there's a kind of zama-zama draw, that there's a community meeting, people explain what the project will involve, how many expanded public work opportunities there will be. They're invited to put their IDs or something in a box, and then transparently in front of a community. In other cases, that's a little bit zama-zama still. In other cases, and I think the proposal is that we develop local committees, which would involve, yes, perhaps a councillor, but also local religious leaders, community leaders, whatever, school principals and so on. So, community leaders within the things who play then a part in helping to select and identify. But again, it must be done transparently. And we also believe that as much as possible, the names of those who are participating should be available in a local town hall and in other communities. So as much transparency as possible. Because not only is this problematic, it undermines the very thing that we're trying to achieve, because it's not just about pumping people through the program. Where the programs are well run, what we're seeing is significant evidence of building community cohesion, because we're talking about communities that are ravaged by violence, by all kinds of drugs issues and all kinds of problems. And where there are decent expanded public works programs localized in a particular ward or in a particular township, there is solid evidence that it's not just the participants that benefit, but the community sees greater cohesion. But if it's partisan selection, then actually you're achieving the very opposite. You're creating further tensions and social in communities that have challenges. Just then on the other question, which was around the expropriation bill, because I'm glad that it was asked, because we anticipate coming back to the NCOP somewhere along the line. Essentially, just to remind you, it went to the National Assembly last year, and there was quite a prolonged process within the Portfolio Committee in the National Assembly, and then eventually, coming out of that process, a version was then passed in the National Assembly. It came to the NCOP last year, and it was just ahead of the August local government elections. And the then chair or acting chair of the committee, we put quite a lot of pressure to try and complete the process. Not because we were trying to achieve something before the local government elections, but just we were worried about the long recess that we were all going into. I know the DA felt that we were trying to push the process, which we were. And the perception, and certainly the allegation from some of the parties in the NCOP process, was that the process was flawed. Okay, that was an allegation. then there was a light amendment that was made in the NCRP, which on the basis of that light amendment, we took it back to the NA, and the amendment suggested by the NCRP was accepted. It then went to the president, and the president then received letters, basically, from the Institute of Race Relations, and I think from one or two other entities, but essentially from the Institute of Race Relations, which said two things. It built on the allegations that particularly the DA had made about the process being imperfect in the NCRP. And secondly, the Institute of Race Relations, not sure why, but because it's not particularly their area of interest, they said that the National House of Traditional Leaders had not been sufficiently consulted. Okay. So the president then wrote letters to the speaker and to the chair of the NCRP, Speaker of the House of Assemblies, and CC'd it to the Minister of Public Works. Both the speaker and chair responded that they felt that the processes had been okay. Okay. However, the former Minister of Public Works, on advice, wrote to the President and said, there is likely to be a challenge on the process in NCRP. And rather than then spend the next 3 years in a court challenges, let's run it. Our suggestion from BPW was that let's run it again. Okay. So that's what's happened. So the president has referred it back to the speaker. The speaker referred it to the portfolio committee. The portfolio committee referred it to the National House of Traditional Leaders. They will not, I don't think they have amending powers, but they can make proposals and suggestions. The state law advisor has consistently said that it was not, the customary law was not at all affected one way or another in the bill, so it didn't need to go there, but out of courtesy, that's what will happen. So that's, I'm getting almost 80 pages of slides. Just to say that we are now awaiting a response from the National House of Traditional Leaders. I'm not sure that they've got a month to do it, and I think the month is probably by, but anyhow. So we will certainly be coming back, and it does mean that we need to make sure this time around that in the NCOP we tick all the boxes effectively and so forth, so hopefully we can achieve that. But it's essentially on procedural issues that the President, and not on content issues, that the President has referred the bill back to. Thank you.
I don't remember just before the DG comes in and the team, I'm receiving a request, you know, there are other meetings that are taking place. Some members thought that by 12 will be done. So I want to make a request that, you know, when we deal with the APP, we then adopt the report. I wanted that, us to adopt the report so that we allow those members who have to go to other meetings to be able to do so. And then we continue with the line of questions. Can we agree on that? Okay. Let me just read in the resolution. The Sigle Committee on Economic and Business Development, having considered budget vote 11, Public Works and Annual Performance Plan 2017-2018 of the Department of Public Works, reports that it has concluded its deliberation thereon. A report to be considered. Can we have a mover and a second for the adoption of the report? Can we have a second? Then adopted. Thank you. Can we then? You can take us through.
My colleagues from the department are saying it, that I must answer the country matter. The Basically, the answer, and our minister has responded to a written question in the National Assembly, that contrary to a story I think that we've seen somewhere in some of the newspapers, nothing is happening from our side, from DPW side at all in regard to Nkandla. Okay. Other than obviously the disciplinary processes. I didn't share that remark.
Thank you, Chair. I have allocated some of the questions to various people, but I will deal with some of those that I have identified and the few that I have identified as necessary for me. I think there's a question on the external environment issues that relate to economic projections. These projections are projections that were issued by National Treasury when they were preparing for the publication of the budget. The reality now is that those projections are adjusted downwards rather than, because effectively in the last two quarters the economy has underperformed from compared to what was the situation. So we're actually in a technical recession. So that is a reality, and we used that. And therefore, when we report, for example, our annual report, we will actually have to report on the basis of what has happened and how that has affected our ability, if there has been any major effect on our progress. I think on page 78, we probably are suffering from oversimplification of what is otherwise a comprehensive program, which is not just maintenance, it's also refurbishment, and I think there's also issues that relate to increasing office space and dealing with a very old infrastructure in the NCOP building. Unfortunately, if you are in public works, you are sitting between a rock and a hard place, because this work has been as a result of a lot of pressure on us. I hold frequent discussions on a monthly basis with Parliament administration, and they are very impatient with some of these things because they affect the morale and I think there have been certain various structures within Parliament, and therefore we needed to do that. These are estimates. When the actual work is done, often you'll find that you go to the market and you realize that the actual cost is going to be less, and sometimes we spread it over a period. But we have to deal with some of these things because they've been causing a lot of pressure, resulting in committees being held outside of Parliament in some cases. And at a considerable cost to Parliament.
My worry, sir, is that the person who was doing those missions, they never worked. So if the administration is giving a pressure, I think as the department, you need to give the contractor a pressure, because he received the money that he did not qualify for.
Certainly, we will do that. We will monitor them and ensure that they deliver all the things that are expected. There's a whole lot of projects. Mr. Tobakale will be able to provide additional information if you have it with you. But it's not just 116 for machines only. It's a whole lot of issues within the project itself. And I think it upsets the other question, the issue of transferring it for school. I think it's understandable, but schools in the process, in the framework of public work, are a province of the provincial governments of public works. and their maintenance is allocated in terms of the equitable share that goes to the provinces. The provinces that probably from time to time fail to actually prioritize these schools. And I think while we sympathize with that, we've got a general infrastructure backlog across the board that is a big problem. Maybe let me finish mine. The 10 million, honorable member, you will recall is for the allocation for transport for Parliament. The buses and all of the transport that is being, all of the tender we often discussed for the...
That's a new tender that's
turned out, the 10 million? If you look at it, we have provided for inflation increases, and often we go out on tender, I think for a period of 2 to 3 years sometimes, and we provide for inflation. It's not a major increase. It's really for that. It's a statutory requirement that we have to do. The vacancy rate of key positions is currently, I think there were advertisements that were published. There was a moratorium because we needed to make sure that we consult widely with unions and everybody else, and there's general agreement about the post-structuring negotiations that we have concluded there. Yesterday, I was approving, for example, the top brass of the PMT, the DDGs, job descriptions, job functions, and all of those things. You will see, I think, this Sunday or the Sunday after this Sunday, that we will publish another series of positions, that vacant positions, for which we intend to conclude by end of August. That is the target the minister has set us, and we intend to make sure that that is achieved. I will back up any short fall from the responses that my colleagues will make. Let me start with, I think Minister has dealt with a whole lot of the Deputy Minister, with the issues in the EPWP, but there are technical issues that Mr. Stanley Henderson will handle. Let me start with him.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair, honorable members. Our Deputy Minister has dealt with the number of the issues mainly with regard to the recruitment guidelines. Please allow me to just add perhaps one or two technical issues. Yes, the guidelines do exist, and it was for the very reason that we were concerned about issues raised. And we really need, if they're individual concerns still, we need to get those. But let me add that the guidelines are fairly, in essence, we would like communities to become involved in the recruitment of EPWP participants, because poor is poor. That's in essence, if I can answer like that, and the recruitment guidelines will be made available to this committee as soon as they've been signed off. That's the first point. Second point is just with regard to the wage ranges in the recruitment guidelines, we touch on that also, because the EPWP wage range, it is guided by the special ministerial determination in the Expand Public Works program that's updated every year in October, November by the Minister of Labour. And the principle is that public employment programs, the wage range should not be such that it displaces permanent jobs. You don't want to draw people out of permanent employment into public employment programs. Then the net effect is zero. You would like rather more people to move into the world of work. The third point perhaps that I would like to touch on here is the question raised by the honourable member with regard to the underperformance of Limpopo province. In essence, it lies with the municipalities. 96% of the municipalities in Limpopo did not utilize their budgets, especially the infrastructure budgets, in such a way that it could create work opportunities labor intensively. What are we doing about it? Because we are the coordinating department, it's good, all good and well for us to report that to you, but we have extensive plans in place. It's an ongoing matter where we engage with municipalities to assist them to design projects labor intensively. Because once projects in the IDP, in the Integrated Development Plans, had been commissioned, it's very difficult to force service delivery agents or contractors to now employ local people if it has not been built into the tender procedures that local people need to be employed. So we assist at that level. We also do assist in terms of right to the project management process, what we call as a generic term technical assistance, right up from the design phase, implementation phase, and to the up to the reporting phase. So we know in many cases a municipality will claim that projects are implemented, but the projects are not on our database. We engage municipality to make sure that it's actually reported on, because if it's not reported, we do get a finding from the AG also. But we would be more than happy to elaborate on the matter should further information be required. Then one question with regard to the incentive grant, why the fluctuations. Currently the incentive grants, it is based on performance and reporting, which means implementing bodies, those eligible bodies, be it like municipalities or provincial departments, they have to use the equitable share component to implement EPWP projects, then report on it, and based on that, a formula would then be applied to determine the extent or the size of the incentive grant. You will see how it fluctuates, which means it's often based on poor reporting. I should also mention to this committee that we are currently reviewing, we have commissioned research on the incentive grants, on the incentive grants across, all across to ensure that it's actually achieving its purpose. And the purpose was to upscale or to get additional work opportunities rather than reducing the EPWP projects to just those linked to the incentive grant that's being received. If it goes that route, it becomes like a perverse incentive and will become systematically smaller and smaller if the incentive grant does not work properly, and once the research is finalized, that will be shared with this committee also. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Then I will ask Mr. Imtiaz Faisal
to give the governance one.
Thank you, Rishi. Chairperson and members of the committee, let's talk about the fraud and corruption quickly. Some of the programs we engage, for example, is day-to-day emergency maintenance. What we do is we are busy working on day-to-day maintenance, having identified it as an area that is very susceptible to fraud and corruption. You'd very often find the repair of a geyser in a correctional facility that doesn't exist. I mean, the other day we received a report where there's no evidence that a contractor entered the gates, repaired the geyser, and left the premises. In fact, there's no evidence that there's even a geyser on the premises. So a new internal control system needs to be implemented to ensure that we record the components on each of the premises. Also have a history when it was last repaired, for example, so that proper maintenance can take place on an ongoing basis. That's only one control. I think the important thing to mention is that we spend ₹1 billion a year on emergency maintenance in state-owned buildings. So that is an area we've identified. There's also a new IT system being implemented around this emergency maintenance so that we have the right kind of information to plug gaps that give rise to fraudulent practices. So that's one example. Another example is the integrity management framework which we are implementing. Because while you have all the programs designed to plug the gaps and prevent fraud and corruption, you also got to think about organizational behavior. So the integrity management framework talks to issues of disclosure of financial interests, but also motivating staff to comply with the terms of the code of conduct, to then arbitrate and then moderate the behavior of an individual. It's to appeal to everybody and ask them to recognize that we're all public servants, that every rand of corruption is depriving somebody of a plate of food. It's that kind of thing. So that's the overall approach that we're using, is the hardcore controls and also the soft appeal to members to moderate their behavior. Moving from fraud and corruption, I want to also just join the discussion about the EPWP and the way work is awarded or the opportunities are awarded. We received a complaint through the Office of the Deputy Minister that he received from a member of the opposition in Parliament to investigate those kind of allegations in KZN. And we had two investigations in KZN. I know one was in Namlazi, and the other one was in one of the other areas in Durban. We investigated it, and we were very keen to deal with this because we received instructions, not that we needed it, but we also received instructions that we need to nip this in the bud. But what you found is that this is based on hearsay. In fact, a lot of the allegations were false because councillors don't appoint or don't select members. There are processes to make the selections. And we found that a lot of the evidence given to us was based on hearsay and not admissible, not usable. So we had to conclude that the allegations could not be substantiated. But we are ready to investigate these things, I must say, to the members. That is regarding the issue and of EPWP. I just want to conclude without repeating my colleagues. The honourable member across me made mention of when are we auditing our buildings. I think it was referring to the buildings that were planted from the state. Yes, I also want to make mention of a project that we've launched called Operation Bringback. We'll be looking at... It is a nice word, but you know, the work is the hard work.
I think it should be
take back. Yes. Yeah, Chairperson, what I want to say is that... it's a very complicated program. It was launched many years ago before we got here, and nothing really happened. I know that this committee and the portfolio committee called the helpline to see that it works. And that is the only call ever received on that helpline. But last year we commenced with a new program that's sponsored by MINMEC. It's not only a public works program, but it's a national program including the 9 provinces. And what you will find is some provinces are doing very well, like the Eastern Cape. They're finding these properties. And the other province doing well is to a certain extent is Gauteng. And on a national level, the department is giving good leadership. We've identified nearly 2,000 properties through our asset register rebuild program, which are not occupied for the intended purpose, to put it that way. But we've also identified perhaps about 25 properties that were illegally transferred. That is something special. That's the one honorable member you are referring to. That is surreptitious practice, where you occupy a property is well and good. We all can all do that. But where you transfer a property illegally, you're engaging in fraud and corruption. So we found at least 25 of those. And one involves a very well-known developer having swindled these properties from the department. Now, we've also picked up another one in KZN in the recent weeks about a criminal syndicate identifying properties that are vacant and that are owned by the state, and targeting those properties through the deed system for illegal transfer in the hope that we will not notice, given our huge portfolios. And there are about 60 properties involved there, and those properties are owned variously by ourselves, the municipality of Eteguini, and also the KwaZulu-Natal provincial. Yes. But there are many other properties. We're not touching the tip of the iceberg, and I'm just acknowledging that. But we are doing something, and we are succeeding now. What we said to our new minister as well is that we need a marketing campaign, because quite clearly we need the public to come forward. We've conducted detection work on the entire DIS record, 100 million records. We identified 41 public work staff who bought properties in the department. We went for them. And we discovered that our staff could not have purchased these properties illegally. Could not have. So we closed it. So we go on to the next one to identify unusual transfers on a Sunday or on a public holiday, and we investigate those, 3,000 of them. We're wasting our time. We need the public to come forward to point us towards properties that they are aware of that were transferred illegally or acquired under suspicious circumstances. Because so far, our illegal transfers have all been identified by whistleblowers. So the next stage of our campaign is to engage in a whistleblowing strategy, and we believe that we have enough information at our disposal to entice the attention of the public, if you know what I'm saying. That we have found this already, we found this, there's a syndicate in KZN, there's a fraud going on in Pretoria, Waterkloof area examples to use, and to ask the public to come forward using various media, radio and the hard press, etc., and even Parliament to come forward, because we've been hearing about this for a long time, the OBP, but it's very difficult to find it. But at least we're happy to say we found some, but we've got a lot of work to do, and we'll be on that path going forward. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the start is the fact that we now have asset registers, Honourable Member. We do have them, and we are using them. We run frequent runs against the deeds register. That's where you pick up any transfers. All of a sudden, one asset was there. It's now it now doesn't appear in your name in the disk register. You have to follow it up and make sure that it was actually disposed by government through records. And if it's not, then that's what we put into the special investigation team so that they can then take it up forward. Again, the asset register is not going to be static. But what is important is that we should never now allow a situation where there's a period of flux doing nothing on the asset register ever. That's why we have established, in terms of our turnaround strategy, a unit dedicated to maintenance of that asset register, which is the unit that has to run these things against us. Now, I think the proof that there is an asset register is that one of the opposition members published because we provided the database, it's there and available, coming out of our register with GPS points and all of those things. I think what she did, she must have obtained a wrong or may have misread the GPS positions and found that some of the assets are in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and all of those things. But when we followed up, we realized that no. Those GPS that she was using were wrong. They were not from the asset register. I don't know where they were. And the coordinates themselves. And but that is water under the bridge. I think it was corrected. That asset register. Yeah. Thank you very much. The next person is Mr. Tumahale.
Can I request that we be brief with regard to responses. We really we're having a debate at 2, so we wanted to allow members also at least to have lunch before we go to the house. If we can be brief in our responses.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. There wasn't much on construction. There was an issue raised about police houses in Hartford. We follow it up. I've looked through our repairs and maintenance projects for the Northern Cape province. I have not picked that up, but we'll discuss it with SAPS. Normally, what we do with our clients is to advise them on priorities, and they make a decision, and we attend to those. So that for me that's the only issue that I could pick up. The DG was able to deal appropriately with the renovations on NCOP.
Yeah. just to add, Honourable Member, we have engagements with the department, the police service, correctional services, defense, and justice. These are the departments that are notorious for residential properties, where they allocate to staff, and then they are abandoned without our knowledge. They never report them to us. We only discover when there is a community report around those things. I've approached all the accounting officers. I'm having discussions with them. Because now we have to. If they no longer require them, then we must take a decision about disposal or transfer to those departments, such as human settlements, that may have a use for them, and make sure that those properties are not vandalized and used by criminals, for an example. They often leave us with their bill, electricity bill. And that's why you find that nobody maintains them, because nobody knows that they were left abandoned, vandalized, etc. So we will still continue. When I have my next discussion with the commissioner, I'm going to raise this particular case so that we can be able to deal with it.
Rather last question.
Just on that, you know, I mentioned this to Minister Nesi when he was newly appointed, and it was like 4 years already. So my question is just, after 4 years, we're still sitting at exactly the same point. If it can come from a higher level down, I would really appreciate it.
Okay. No, I've given you more than enough. Sir. We have 3 sets of minutes, and if I start to talk before one. I'm going to allow Honorable Launch to ask a question, but he has indicated that he has spoken to Honorable Makwebu to take responsibility for that question. Okay, let me first deal with the question so that the department can then respond to that question. Then come.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate it. Deputy Minister, are there any public works building or state buildings that were affected by the fires that engulfed the Naizna and surrounding areas? And if so, one wanted to know if the department could prioritize that so that we can bring back life to the town, so that the good employment and the built environment area could be involved. That was the question, Chairperson, for Honorable Bond. Thank you.
Mine is not a question. We are always hard on the department, but when they get a clean audit, we don't thank them and congratulate them. I just wanted to say congratulations.
In the annual report. Okay.
With regard to my question concerning Fatala, Operation Fatala, it seems as if it's in the manual that I don't have. But with regard to the clinic in Khabit, where Winnie Mandela, I'm with you there, you see there. What is the government saying? Thank you.
Is that the house? The clinic?
No, it's not.
Yeah, I don't know. We can take it up, because that would have been a provincial competence in some of the province. I thought you were talking about the one that was in the news recently, which I've inquired through IPT. Their involvement, the Winnie Mandela, the house museum itself.
Yes, the museum.
Yes.
No. Not a clinic. The clinic and the museum. But I'm not referring to the museum because of the paper.
Yeah.
Yes.
I did ask the regional office to work with the province. They indicated that no house was affected, except that I think there was an vacant land that was affected, which didn't incur major damages. That is the situation.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I wanted to make a proposal that if there are any other questions, we do that through the committee secretary, and then they go to the department, but then the department should not treat them as that's a written question,
but there's certain questions that were responded to. But I'll give you Honorable Makoko.
Chairperson, you're not fair. You're biased against us ANC members that you don't allow us to pose questions. Chair, I think it's important through you to just say to the department that we've done oversight in Mpumalanga and we were very disturbed by some of the findings there. But we will just mention them to you now. The management committee is looking at appropriate ways in which we can follow up with you on those.
Do you want a comment, yes? Or you want a response? Thank you very much. As I was indicating that some of the questions will be dealt with through the committee secretary to the department, let me take this opportunity to first request the DM for closing remarks before we deal with other internal matters. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It's always dangerous to give a politician the space to make closing remarks because, you know, politicians can talk forever, but which I won't do. Just to thank the select committee, and we particularly appreciate critical questions as well, and we see you as our you know, ears and eyes on the ground in assisting us to do our job better than you know, to improve our performance. So thanks for the chance to support the engagement. Thank you very much. I think that was short, eh?
Yeah. No, we appreciate. Thank you very much, CM, DJ and the team. We appreciate your attendance and response to the questions that you raised. I'm sure we'll meet next year when we deal with the annual report. But we'll also be focusing on the entities as part of our program. Thank you very much. We will release DM and the team, and the members will then deal with the other internal matters. It won't be that long.
I was talking public works.
I didn't see that one coming.
Honorable members, Mr. Fraser, we have released you. Honorable members, we have, as I indicated, three sets of meetings, minutes. The Department of Labor on the 6th of June, the Department of Transport on the 7th of June, and then last week on the 13th, Department of Public Works. We start then with the one of the 6th of June, Department of Labor. We go page by page for corrections or missions. Page one, check if your name, the initials have been correctly captured. Page two,
Honorable
Dikhale was both present. Yeah. I know she was present, so we must correct that, Committee Secretary. You put her on both apologies and I know she was, if you look at the content, yeah, I remember she was asking about Limpopo, the Department of Labor. Yeah, I remember, clearly. She was present. anything on page 2? Anything else? Page 3? Why, Martina, are you smiling at me? Martina is smiling, looking at me. Martina. I don't know why he's looking at me with a smile. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. And page 7, the last. Can we have a move on the second for the adoption of minutes? Honorable Dikhale, can we have a second? Any second? Excuse me. Honorable Chabambu. And then the next set of minutes is dated the 7th of June.
Can I just do a follow-up on one item?
Okay.
It'll be half a minute. On page 6, under the resolution, the department to provide the committee with data for short speakers.
Okay.
Can we get that data? Can we get feedback on that?
So we have not received the data. I'll make a follow-up.
Please. I suggest that when we said that department must provide us with information, if that information comes to the secretary, please circulate to all the members of the committee. Even with this one, and we have requested that they must send us information. Guide their recruitment. Yeah, please send them to the all the members of the committee. But that doesn't nullify the adoption of minutes. It's just more of a matter of arising. The next one is the Department of Transport. Again, we'll go through page by page. Page 1. Page 1 and 2. Okay, if you can correct that. Page, anything else on page 2?
No.
Page 3? Page 4? Page 5? Page 6? The last page five.
It's a serious, the undisciplinary deliberation.
Yes.
That first sentence doesn't make sense.
The committee welcomed the presentation from the
department. Of course, there are no holes, there's water. But that whole sentence doesn't make sense.
The committee what?
The member raised a concern with regard to port holes and indicated that almost all provincial roads needed to be constructed. We have provincial roads. In order to avoid the accidents that are taking place daily.
What
sorry, what's that?
Page 5. The first bullet.
Yeah.
On the top.
A member indicated.
The member raised the concern.
Potholes.
We never discussed potholes.
Potholes.
And we can't say that almost all provincial roads needed to be constructed.
Not all.
That's what the minister said.
I'm looking at other minutes. I can't find what you say.
Is it not almost?
No, I have a different
Members, unfortunately, we have to defer this meeting, as I indicated, that we won't be having the meeting next week because the Chief Whip was indicating that the appropriation bill, you know, the scheduling and voting, it normally takes us a long time. So he was indicating that it's going to take place from, say, 10, meaning that the time that we use for the committee meeting will be used for plenary on Tuesday. So that therefore means that that will be the only Tuesday, and then we're going for recess and constituency period, only coming back in August. But then, to be fair to members, we need to give them these minutes so that they're able to go through them.
Chair, can I test to the other members of the House, because we are the same people, we may also propose that we adopt the minutes on Wednesday. It's just a different meeting, but it's the same people.
No problem. Don't last it.
What's the view?
Accept.
Yeah. So we'll just convene that meeting and then deal with the minutes. Maybe we can start with it.
Okay.
No, there's another set.
The last one. No, this one is just two pages. It's the members that were there, and those are the pages on page one.
Page one, page two. She apologized, yes. It's under
apology.
Yes, but it's not under apologies. Oh, it's there, yeah, it's under apologies, yeah, correct. Yes. And the last page, three, can we have a move by the seconder? Honorable Sabangu, Honorable Makuwe. Meeting at 10.
Thank you.
You get the report?
No.